It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and I'm joined, as always, by Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Hi, guys.
Hi, Guy.
You know, Jason, your voice is as clear as the tinkle of glass against a cocktail ice. And my voice is as painful as the $10 scotch I'm drinking. Oh, God, I'm so poor.
We will sell no wine before it's time. What is it, Renee?
Yes, Paul Masson. I've also spilled scotch all over my desk. Oh, no.
We are talking about J. Digger Doyle, Season 1, Episode 17, which does indeed feature Robin Masters's voice and body double and his plane, which flies over all sorts of different geography in a very short period of time. Oh, yeah.
And one of the few times...
in the south of France and his Innsbruck Chateau. Mm-hmm. And his Manhattan apartment. Boy, he has a lot of places. And he can afford Lafitte Rothschild? I don't think so.
and this property taxes alone
would break him.
This is one of the only times there's like this credit of Orson Welles as the voice of Robin Masters. And is this like the most Robin in any episode? I think it might be.
Yes. I'd hate to think that there was more.
Yeah. I kind of want to hear all the outtakes where he's bitching about the writing and the directing. What do you mean he's named Higgins?
You wouldn't direct any living actor in Shakespeare like this. It's insulting.
What is this, a My Fair Lady person? I don't think so. Magnum? What kind of a name is Magnum? Well, fine. Give me cash.
Mm-hmm.
Frozen peas.
Yep. Peas by this Higgins fellow. This episode begins somewhere in France.
Two days ago.
Robin is narrating his book because, as we discover, he doesn't write his books. He narrates them onto cassette tapes. There's a plot point
except
about
in
that.
Future episodes where he types away.
Well, he's so disgusted by the tapes here that... anyway, it is the voice of Orson Welles. There's an attempt on his life. There's somebody laying down in a road in France somewhere, but his driver is savvy enough to know it's a setup and drives away, and they try to get him. And now Robin is on the run. He needs to protect himself. He has four estates, and so he's going to flee to one of them, and we don't know which one, except we're watching Magnum P.I., so I have a pretty good idea.
No one knows which estate
it's the apartment
Robin
in Manhattan.
Will show up at. Yeah.
But you know, everybody runs in Hawaii.
I would actually like to propose a spinoff from this episode. Uh-huh. Not the spinoff that they were trying to do, but rather a show called Robin on the Run. And it's sort of a combination of where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, and also that the Deal or No Deal from NBC a few years ago, where basically it's Robin Masters and he flies to various cities and the contestants have to guess which. And then they negotiate with Robin Masters for, I don't know, a couple of bucks, their life. I don't know.
So it's sort of a children's educational game show is what you're saying?
Yes, where they're playing for the most deadliest game, the most dangerous game of all, Jason. Money.
Okay. Sure. All right. I'll get right on that. I'll work up a pitch.
Yes. Can you green light that for me? I'll need $500,000 to make it work. And we'll need to bring Orson Welles back from the dead and get some ladies in bikinis, I guess.
You know, we can afford this. This, you know how we can afford this? Because we're going to make a mint with our fitness via fruit juice drinking system that we're going to.
Yes. You didn't tell me about the vodka.
Oh.
Vodka was my addition.
Yes. Yes. Good. That's a good Rick. Moana is the waitress, by the way. Moana, which is
She has a whole story off to the side with songs and everything. It's great.
Yeah.
We never see that.
So Erin Gray is in this episode. We meet her here. Yeah. She's Joy Digger Doyle. She's running. Magnum runs past her, and then she runs past him, and he's going to race her on a surf ski in order to compensate for not being as fast as she was on the sand. And she's got her own red Ferrari.
And the same Hawaiian shirt.
And in the moment she came on screen, I thought to myself, oh, God, I loved her when I was a when I was a preteen boy and she was on Buck Rogers. There was no person I loved more. It's like meeting somebody from your past, except she was just a person on TV. I'm like, oh, it's Erin Gray. Anyway, what I'm saying is she looked great.
Very much so. Yes. I was saying beforehand, I was watching on the AirPods, so I didn't disturb anybody. And every now and then the boys would look up at different things. And, you know, all of a sudden there she is in a bikini talking with Magnum. And I just hear this from the couch. Yeah. Like, that's my boy. That's my boy.
Yeah. Well, Erin Gray, 35 years later, still getting it done. I mean, it was 35 years ago. But by the way, I have been in the same room with Erin Gray because she was at Comic-Con one of the years I was there. And the sad part is it was her and Gil Gerard, and they were signing autographs in the autograph area, and there was no line, and there was nobody there.
Oh.
And I did not go over to them.
Oh, no.
I felt bad.
Really?
Yeah. Oh.
Come on. That's Buck Rogers.
I know.
And Wilma.
And Wilma. That's right.
I was going to say it's Wilma and Buck Rogers.
Also TV Silver Spoons. You know, throw that in there too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which I did watch.
If Alfonso Ribeiro would have been there, there would have been a crowd.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's in this, and I think she's great in this. I think she's fun. I think the show. I think there's some good moments where you don't really know whose side she's on. Where maybe there's one twist too many there, but I like that you think she's one thing, and then it turns out she's another thing, and then you're suspicious of her again, but that turns out not to be true quite. It goes back and forth and it keeps you guessing, and I like that. But she also comes across as somebody who is kind of Magnum meets his match here, right?
She's Lady Magnum.
Yeah, she is Lady Magnum.
Homage to Moises.
I very much enjoyed her performance. I thought that she and Tom Selleck had no chemistry.
Yes.
I don't really.
Phil, I wouldn't say no chemistry. I would say that Erin Gray in 1981 brings a whole lot of chemistry on her own, but none was added.
Yeah, yeah.
None was added by Tom Selleck.
No. No, and while I like this episode, it really is. Magnum's a bit of a dick throughout the episode.
Yep.
Magnum,
a little bit. A little bit.
Magnum is really unpleasant. almost to the point of the cancel Magnum culture is what we need with the way Magnum is behaving in this episode. Really acting quite the jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a hallmark of a Donald Belisario written episode.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
So
because she is an undercover security expert.
Yes.
And she tricks Magnum into letting him into the Robin Masters compound. And boy, does Magnum not like being tricked, says the man who makes his living tricking people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he doesn't like the tables being turned. I do like when she gets to the estate, he lets her in, and of course then it's revealed that she's actually a security expert, and it's a quick leap to then having Higgins feel like she's in charge, which I found perplexing. Like, I get why they want to do that for the story, but like, Magnum's in charge of security, not Higgins. This should all be about Magnum's failure, and instead Magnum is just sitting there watching Higgins get thrown around, which I think is kind of funny. Although there is a fantastic line. This is season one, mind you, season one.
Right.
And there's a reference to Robin Masters and all of his lurid parties. And I laughed because, of course, as the series goes on, there will be a ridiculous Robin Masters party for every occasion.
And none of them seem to involve mirrored bedrooms or anything.
No,
that's
just her. You know, she's working. She's working Magnum.
I mean,
there
he did have Scandinavian stewardesses in the pilot.
Yeah, it's true.
But
I like their banter in the car when they're driving to the estate. I think it's good, but it is some of the worst looping of dialogue I have ever heard. Once again, apparently that Ferrari is completely soundproof. You pay for the soundproof; it's extra. For the soundproof,
we will let you use the Ferrari, but you can't put any microphones in it.
Nope.
I did appreciate
that was the condition.
Later on when he's at the airport with TC at the helicopter, there is wind noise, and I actually said, why don't you ever hear wind in the Ferrari? Well, there you go.
They've given up entirely.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. we get some insight into Robin's writing here, where there's like a laser beam, and it, like, I wrote down, what are these novels, as we get a passage read by Orson Welles from this ridiculous, like,
and it was clear that Mark had been tried to have been killed by Madonna.
By Madonna,
when
yeah, Madonna.
She sold the lasers to Vladimir.
Mm-hmm.
What? What?
Yeah. Also, when they get to the estate, Magnum has to hold down the button and ask Higgins to let him in, which I find very. Does Magnum not have the code to the place where he lives? I mean, maybe that's a Higgins power move, but it seems very strange to me.
I would assume it was something in his Ferrari, like he could push a button, maybe.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Because they were driving an Aaron Gray's Ferrari. It's very confusing.
But
there are two Ferraris. There are two Ferraris. In this episode.
But it has bothered me all throughout the series that when it was convenient for Magnum or TC or Rick to not get in, they couldn't get in. And when it was convenient for them to get in,
they could. Well, they just
and
go right over,
just
they go over
show
the wall,
up.
David. They go right over that wall where there's a low wall part that we see
but how
in
many,
this episode.
How many times do clients just show
just
up,
show
at,
up
the,
at the front at the door? Yeah.
Right?
You're saying Magnum is
cab
inconsistent
drivers.
With the security of the...
little bit. The as well as the age of all the clients. No.
Maybe it's normally not on high security, but then there's a Robin Masters lockdown that happens when there's an attempt made on his life, and they tighten up.
Which is weekly, it seems, based on all these episodes that we've been doing.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Was there like a crime spree against Pulp Fiction writers of the 1970s? Was James Michener like constantly having to change identities or because really a lot of people want to kill poor Robin Masters.
Yeah, there was that time when Squeaky Fromm tried to kill James Clavell right before Gerald Ford. It's weird.
Exactly.
That was the practice. That was the the thing about this plot. Okay, so these guys are trying to get the tapes of Robin's new book, and it comes out that Robin's new book is about selling lasers.
It's about lasers. That's right.
But it's a novel. So why do they care?
Yeah.
It's a novel.
I don't know.
But hey, okay.
I don't know.
But they made Orson Welles say tons of horrible dialogue. So it works out. I'm okay with that.
Oh, by the way, the biggest bad thing that Magnum does in this episode is where he ruins TC's big paying job from
this,
a rich guy.
Speaking of fooling
people. This enraged
me.
Yes. This enraged me. Because it wasn't like they were going to offer TC matching money, or if they were, that was handled off camera. Because, Magnum is screwing up TC's business.
Yeah, yeah. He's literally, there's going to be a very negative Yelp review about, well, I didn't write on this.
About to say, if this were in the age of Yelp, that would be, we just drove away.
Yeah, Island Hoppers, I don't recommend
no
it.
We didn't
write on Island Hoppers, but the man right before us looked
the
very ill.
The test guy from the FAA,
yeah,
no less.
He might have gotten sick afterwards, so we just fled. So I don't use Island Hoppers, whatever you do. 0 stars.
Though I do appreciate they set this up. It's Chekhov's TC snarky comment where he says, "No, I'm not going to help you, Thomas, because every time this happens, I'm going to get shot at."
Yep.
And at the end of the episode, when he gets shot at, it's just this moment of him in the helicopter where he just goes, "Uh-huh."
It is a great running gag in the show when there's a bullet hole in the helicopter, right? Like TC's filling out the invoices right there.
My favorite moment of the episode was TC doing the the slow burn in the helicopter as he's being shot at.
This is also the first use of Higgy Baby.
Yes.
Yes.
So, that's
when poor Roger Mosley gets treed by Zeus.
Yep. Yep.
And Aaron Gray lectures us on what good attack dogs do.
Yeah, she has a lot of opinions because she works for Starguard, a security firm.
Yeah, they really spent like hours coming up with that name. Well, we guard stars, so what should we call ourselves? Starguard is one syllable too many. Let's take it back to Starguard and let's go have lunch.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're a spinoff of the Legion of Superheroes, the Starguard. It's a super space superheroes of some sort. Magnum in this section. So Aaron Gray is being a jerk to Higgins Magnum is being a jerk to Erin Gray. There's just this whole, it's kind of this unpleasant moment where she says this is as antiquated as a World War II soldier, which of course makes Higgins sad. But then Magnum calls her cold as an iceberg. She does talk on the phone to Robin.
He's quoting.
Yeah.
He's quoting cold as an iceberg.
Yeah, but like.
Although I was disturbed. So, okay. Mm. So she tells him to poke holes in her defense, and he goes right to the Robin phone and calls and gets Renee. And Renee, turns out, is also working for Stargard.
Yeah.
And he says, all right, describe the operative that you sent to Hawaii. So he does in this wonderfully louche French accent. Damn it. Louche French accent.
Okay.
And he, you know, one of his details is she has a barbell-shaped birthmark on her lower right buttock. Ask her to show it to you. What?
Yeah,
what?
And Magnum says, I've seen it.
Cancel Magnum!
Well, cancel Renee!
Yeah. Although this is actually one of those moments that I like from a mystery, which is later on, they really set up the suspicion that you've got about Digger Doyle, and that she's a liar, and that she's actually out to get Robin. And the thing that... Even though you wonder that, this is the scene that actually makes it that it's more complicated than that, because they do call Robin and talk to him, and everybody hears that it's Robin. So like the idea that these people aren't actually connected to Robin but are trying to kill him is invalidated by that. But then you get later on, and you're like, well, wait a second. Oh, well, they did talk to Robin. And it's actually a little more complicated than that, because it's Stargard and they've got multiple clients and things like that. But it's a nice little piece of the puzzle when they're trying to put together this like mystery with lots of, you know, lots of suspects and trying to do some twists and turns. Speaking of which, go ahead.
I kind of liked all the twisting and turning.
Yeah.
I have to admit.
Yeah. No, I did not know, having no memory of this episode, which I assume I didn't see because I would remember Erin Gray on Magnum
PI. Oh, you'd remember Erin Gray.
I was wondering about whether she was bad or not, and going back and forth on it a lot. But we're at the point now, by the way, where Higgins is kidnapped using the old laying in the road trick that didn't work in France, but it worked on Higgins. Higgins stops
for a dead body
in the road.
He doesn't have a driver who can say, aha, there's the old laying in the road trick. Secondly,
and also, he saw a motorcycle accident, whereas
true.
Renee just saw someone lying in the road.
Yes.
So he's actually like, oh, I should help.
So,
and then it turns out to be Tom Selleck's ex-wife.
I was about to say, who is that lady lying in the road? That's Mrs. Tom Selleck.
That's right.
We've seen both of her Magnum PI episodes now.
That's right.
Mission accomplished with this podcast.
Yeah, she is as notable an actress in this as she was in that one, which is to say not.
Yes.
But so Higgins is captured. He's kidnapped, but... he has been recording his resignation letter, which again seems a bit much, to Robin Masters on tape. I guess Robin Masters does everything on tape. That's basically the fact here, and that's why there are tapes in all these vehicles, is because you've got to have them for Robin. But
he's got to be ready to narrate at any moment.
He's taken away to a lair.
I imagine that people bring Robin Masters like printed out memos, and he's all tape. Record it, please. I can't read.
Just read it out loud to me now.
Just read.
I love to hear the sound of my voice describing laser-cut diamonds in the sunlight.
And if you bore me, I might shout pause. Imagine that you are a cassette that has been paused while I get a drink.
I also need you to announce the punctuation of your letter. Stop for period. Pause for comma.
So
flip the tape for part two.
So they're gonna sodium pentothal Higgins or whatever the modern equivalent is.
Yeah, not just sodium pentothal. This is much.
It's
this
the
is much
hydroxychloroquine Higgins.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Higgins
shoot him full of Thunderbird and make him talk.
And so he gets all goofy in kind of a nice scene where he's like, oh yes, I'm very familiar with all the this is good stuff, right? Like it's.
Oh, that's good sodium pentothal.
This works well.
Yeah. Meanwhile, TC drops off a Magnum and Digger at the top of a bunch of really tall steps descending into like a valley where there's a James Bond style kind of lair that they're descending into, which is the offices of Laseromics that are in this, which is a great, terrible name.
From the makers of Stargard.
Yeah, so I want to just point out Laseromics has an, wherever they shot the interior of the lair of Laseromics, it's supposed to be some sort of business, and yet very clearly in the middle of the room is just a pool table that's been covered up by a sheet. I don't know why.
I think the actual exterior is a decommissioned Navy outfit.
It is. Magnum's description of it is real.
Yeah, that's all real. But then the inside, whatever location it is, to harken back to a previous statement in this episode, it's like, you can shoot in our house, but you can't move the pool table. We're like, all right, well, we'll just put a blanket on it. No one will notice that there's a pool table in Laseromics. It's laser pool. They were testing laser pool.
Jason. The pool table is where they test the laser.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
It's simple science, man.
There's a green felt.
There's a whole thing over here of eight balls with laser holes in them, right? Okay. That's part of what we do here. You shoot pool with lasers.
The glinting of a red laser off the side of an eight ball as it hangs on the edge of the cup. Oh, nothing like it.
That's why they're stealing.
Bring me some ham, Renee. Ham, I say.
The crinkle of chalk on the cue stick.
So they find Higgins. He is high on not sodium pentothal. And so there's some shtick there with John Hellerman. And then as they're escaping, Erin Gray, in not her best part of her performance, does a big theatrical sneeze, which I think is strange because it does succeed at making us think that it's totally fake, but in the end, it's not fake, and therefore it was just a bad acting job or something, or bad direction for her to do that. But anyway, she sneezes, which reveals everything. They've been tromping around in this laser factory for all this time, but it's the sneeze that gives them away.
She did say she wasn't that good of an actor right before that.
And so then they flee, and although there's perfunctory shooting at them, by the people who we know are trying to kidnap Robin, but they don't try very hard. And
I hope their lasers are more accurate than their guns, because they really are terrible shots at Laseromics.
And they're lazy.
Well, they said, we already have what we needed.
Yeah, I guess it's a setup. But the way in the moment you're thinking these people are the worst. They're not even trying. But then you're led to believe that, oh, well, this is actually a setup. They got what they needed. That's what happens.
I do love the use of the location. I think that is a really nice, like, this is the kind of a plot you would get out of a typical Glenn Larson show or a Stephen Cannell show, except you don't often have the Haiku Valley and the Stairway to Heaven and, you know, this just really cool visual. And the only drawback is if you pay attention. So Magnum is carrying Higgins on his back all through the thing.
Visual, by the way. Yeah. Wonderful look that John Hillerman has on his face.
They used the opening credits for a couple of seasons, you know.
Yes, they
did. But when you go to some of those shots where they're running up the staircase and it's a much more distant shot, you can see that it's a Higgins doll.
Nope.
Because the legs are just flopping and bouncing and jumping.
I disagree. It's just showing you how drugged up Higgins is, that his entire body is completely loose.
He's loose and rubbery. He's flexible. Yep. I can
it's a muscle. That's how muscle relaxants work. It may also be a bone relaxant. I don't know.
That's just how strong Tom Magnum is. Yeah.
Fellas, if you love me, you'll get me the Higgins doll for Christmas.
Oh,
we should have had one of those in the museum, damn it.
Oh.
So Magnum has figured it out. He thinks this is all a Stargard setup. They call Robin. There is a switcheroo where they go to the airport to get Robin, but Higgins comes back in Robin's clothes. I guess Higgins and Robin strip down to their skivvies in the back of TC's helicopter on the flight back from Honolulu International. Maybe they went into the bathroom at the Honolulu airport to change their clothes.
Yes. Oh, no. And they avoided all the murders.
What a place to die or change your clothes. Yeah.
But if you'll note, for the conspiracy theorists, this is the first time that Higgins is actually Robin Masters.
Ooh.
No, those conspiracy theorists need to go away because their conspiracy theory is dumb. No. It's super dumb.
The Higgins
All
truthers.
The proof is in this episode.
There are literally right. Higgins truthers that go, you know, maybe Robin Masters was just a patsy that Higgins hired to. No, come on now.
No.
Oh,
we get
it was like Remington Steele.
We get the kiss test here where there's the Magnum kisses the girl in order to do an important test about whether she's telling the truth or lying.
That is not actually how you tell the truth. Now you can understand if people tell the truth.
Nope.
For those of you who wish to avoid lawsuits, it's not acceptable in any work situation.
Not since about 1985.
It wasn't the sodium pentothal kiss. It was a state-of-the-art truth kiss. Come on.
Yep.
Also, the sodium pentothal kiss is pretty good, I have to admit.
And there's a moment at the end where it looks like Higgins is going to ruin everything, but he doesn't ruin everything, and it's fine. We find out that the guy who is at Stargard is, it's all been a setup because the Laseromics people are also a client. They're not just the president of Stargard, I'm also a client. And so the episode ends, and this is something very important that I wanted to share. So the last scene is this is where Higgins is going to ruin everything. The last scene is Aaron Gray and Tom Selleck are canoodling on the couch in the guest house, and Higgins comes in, and Higgins tells stories, and he continues to tell stories, and you can see that they're both very uncomfortable. And then there's a moment that I really love where it almost turns like, well, you know, he's actually very entertaining, and he's going to leave eventually, and then we can get back to what we're doing here. And so it's frustrating, but it's also funny. But my point in bringing it up is, as a 10-year-old boy, I would look at the scene, and I would probably think, oh, Higgins, he's really annoying them because he's super annoying and he tells stories. As an adult, I know what's going on in a way that I wouldn't at 10. And I just got so angry with Higgins because I'm like, Higgins, Erin Gray at the height of her powers is right here. What are you doing? And now I understand. What I'm saying is, as an adult, I now understand Magnum P.I. a lot better. That's what I'm saying.
So you're enjoying it on a whole different level now.
Yeah. I understand just how awful Higgins is in that scene. As well as, I think they eventually kind of come around to the fact that this is all very amusing and he'll leave eventually and they can get back to it.
See, when I was 10, I was annoyed at him for that. And they kind of made it work for me just because Aaron Gray has this natural laugh when they go to the freeze frame that is just delightful.
Mm-hmm.
I love that laugh. I also love the reveal that after all that hunting Robin's tapes, they were hidden in the guest house the whole time.
Yes.
in among Magnum's just top 40 collection of
Magnum's
tapes.
Popular music tapes. And
Higgins is horrified,
his sticks tapes,
again, is proof that Higgins is not Robin Masters. Higgins is horrified because he's like, they were here the whole time. Yes. And he's like, yes, he gave them to me the last time he was in town. Yep. And, you know,
along with
who is going to look for them there?
Along with Blondie and Sticks. That's where they are.
You know, so yeah, he's not Robin Masters.
Come sail away to the laser factory.
He didn't say anything about Christopher Cross.
Lasers are refracted by a heart of glass.
Como avogadro, Mr. Roboto.
Mm. Anyway, I
Tomo arigato.
What I'm saying is, as a kid, I always knew that Higgins was annoying, but there was that extra level of, you know, again, cock blocking Higgins, a very different feeling is what I'm saying. That's all. Very
wow.
Very different.
Why
feeling.
Wasn't that an episode title?
Well, that's my other idea for a spinoff show.
He just interrupts
in
couples.
In which newlywed couples come on the show and Higgins tries to prevent them from, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to tell you about the time I was in Kenya.
They are intertwined on that couch, and Higgins just comes in and doesn't stop. And I mean, I as a result, it made me laugh because I'm like, this is hilariously extreme and it's super annoying. And he just keeps going. And then there's that turn where they're like, all right, well, what you gonna do? Like, I actually was kind of a really great scene. I just appreciated it on a visceral level that I might not have at 10. That's all I'm saying.
And admittedly, he does want to know where the tapes were. And we need to know that because Aristotelian unity. But then he just keeps going and starts telling war stories, which he has told for the whole episode.
Yep.
And it's wonderful.
Well,
it's horrible, but it's wonderful.
Laseronix is gonna or Laseromix or whatever they are, they're gonna hear from me. I'm gonna write a strongly worded letter about their bad behavior.
We shall bring this up at the next shareholder meeting.
Yeah. The Laser Factory. Anything else about J. Digger Doyle? I guess this was you referenced it earlier, David. This was seen as, if not a backdoor pilot, at least they were toying with the idea of putting Aaron
they
Gray
tried.
In a
they
show.
They did try to make it a pilot. That was the whole thing. And that's why
her
name
character.
Is the title, right? There's no clever title. It's just here's this character.
Yeah.
Boom. And you know, this is Belisario cleaning out his script closet at the end of the first season.
This is
we got to the end of the season.
In Erin Gray's career, this is right after she finished her presence on Buck Rogers and right before she got cast in Silver Spoons. So they were trying to get in that window where she was out of Buck Rogers. They were trying to find, you know, I think she must have been considered a hot property. And they wanted to see if they could maybe cast her as this character. And instead she ended up, that didn't work. And she ended up getting cast in Silver Spoons, where she was for like six more years on that show. So
too many years.
Yeah. But those were her two long running series, I think. So, I mean, it wasn't that long, but 2 years, it seemed like forever when Buck Rogers
was
in
syndication forever.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
true.
I saw it. I don't know how many times I saw it cycle through in the 80s.
And she was in the Rockford Files, which again is where everybody from Magnum was originally in the Rockford Files. So she was in an episode of that. Anyway, that is J. Digger Doyle. And stay tuned for the J. Digger Doyle podcast, which isn't going to happen
because
they didn't make that show.
it's just this episode over and over again.
Anyway, what we learned, what have we learned? We have learned that if somebody is laying in the road, gun it and go past them.
Keep driving.
That is some professional driving advice.
We've learned that lasers are really cool and probably made by evil people.
Yep. These are things we've learned.
We've learned that cock blocking Higgins is the best Higgins.
Yep. Or the worst. Both at the same time, maybe. All right. This has been Magnum Podcast. I've been Jason Snell. They've been Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Bye, guys.
I'm not going to tell you where my birthmark is. Who wrote this crap? My God. How much cash? Oh, fine.
I owe Belisario for something he did for me in the 1970s.
This is going to help me stage my filming of Titus Andronicus, where all the characters are vegetables.
I want to finish the other side of the wells. Give me more voice roles, Belisario.
Madonna ducked beneath the laser beam. Enough time for Vladimir to roll. The bones crushing underneath him made the sound like glass crumbling under...
Under more glass. I never had to do this with the Muppets.